Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Brianna Jones.
And welcome to this super special bonus episode of Musicals for Cheese, where me and Bri look at something fucking terrible.
Yeah, why'd you do this to me?
Okay, so one of the things that I regret not being able to do properly the first time around was Love Never Dies, the sequel to Phantom of the Opera. It was one of our earliest episodes because I wanted it checked off the list, but that also meant you didn't have to watch it.
You're right, I didn't have to.
But since Andrew's gone for a quick hiatus, he'll be back soon, and I figured what better time to force this upon you than right now.
Perfect timing, because you know what? I ran out of my antidepressants, and you know, I was thinking, what could I do to make myself feel better? And it was watch this.
Hell yeah. Today, we're talking about Love Never Dies. Cue the music, Bri.
Love never dies.
So Love Never Dies is a romantic musical with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber and lyrics by Glenn Slater and a book by Ben Elton, Frederick Forsyth, and Ben Slater. It is the sequel to the long-running 1986 musical The Phantom of the Opera and was loosely based on Frederick Forsyth's 1999 novel The Phantom of Manhattan, which is very bad. Very, very bad novel. Even worse than this musical, if you can imagine it.
I can't.
So Bri.
Okay.
What is your experience with The Phantom of the Opera proper?
I was telling you earlier, I watched it maybe anywhere from 12 to 15 years ago, the original. I don't really remember it all that well. And that's really all I can tell you. I know what happens. I Googled it just to make sure I remembered what happens.
Do your best summation based on your Google and memory, like for what you had to go into Love Never Dies with.
Okay. What I had to go in with Love Never Dies. I had to look it up after. But anyway, what I went in thinking, I was like, okay, I remember there was Christine and the Phantom. And I
all right, we're doing good so far.
And for some reason, I remembered it more like Beauty and the Beast, right? That's how I remembered it. Like, she ends up in this place. You know, he's not letting her leave type of deal. But they fall in love in the end. And that's kind of how I remember it.
No, that was not what happened.
Yeah, I know I was wrong, okay? But that's what I went in thinking.
It must have been very confusing to you at first. Because immediately it starts with him being like, man, I miss you. And you're like, what? Why is he miss her? Didn't y'all fall in love?
Yeah. I figured it out along the way.
Okay. And how would you describe the plot of Love Never Dies?
Chaotic. A little crazy. There's a lot
what
going
happens?
On. Okay. So you have the Phantom who has faked his death, apparently, for the last 10 years of Christine.
10 years. That's an important number.
10 years. Very important. Christine has gone off, gotten married, has a child. And I guess you could say she's in this loveless marriage. Maybe loveless, because her husband is a drunk and has gambled away all their money. And so they're off to Coney Island, from Paris to Coney Island, because Christine is going to sing and they're going to pay off all their debts. And this is a deal they have. But behind all this is the Phantom.
Ooh, he's spooky.
Spooky, spooky is right.
He's just there. He's not even the one that invites her there. She just happens to be coming. And he takes
what?
Advantage.
No, I thought it was under a pseudonym.
No, Oscar Hammerstein invited her. And then he's like, I know what Oscar Hammerstein's paying you and I will double it. It was just a happenstance.
I missed this. I thought he was working under a pseudonym. Okay.
I mean, people call him Mr. Y throughout it because...
Yeah.
Mystery, and it only works if you're reading it. If you just say Mr. Y, it doesn't really work.
Right. Okay. I'm understanding this more now that we're having this discussion. This is great. Okay, and then you kind of have these other plots going on. Giri. Meg Giri. She,
And her mom.
And her mom, yes, are kind of handling the shows at Coney Island.
How would you describe the music for the performances?
I can't.
Because in
they're
universe,
they're all the same in my mind.
In universe, the Phantom is supposed to have written all those songs,
right?
Like, can
Love
you imagine
Never Dies.
Him?
Love Never Dies and The Bathing Suit Babe or whatever, Beach Babe, are two very different songs.
Yes.
They were not written by the same person.
I mean, in our world, it still was. And that person is Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Well, Andrew, you fucked up.
I just imagine him with his torn face and like all that. He's just like, Bathing Beauty on
Bathing
the beach.
Beauty.
Bathing Beauty. Like, and she'll be taking off clothes slowly, and then at the end the parasol will pop up and we'll just miss the titties.
And there's stripes and there's polka dots.
Stripes.
And polka dots.
And like, yes. So they're putting on the shows.
Yes. They're putting on the shows. Meg is like, notice me, Phantom.
Phantom Senpai, notice me.
Yes, and then her mom's like, he's never gonna notice you. Listen, Christine's on her way, and he's just never gonna notice you. And then she goes off. Well, she ends up having like a total meltdown, which results in, well, spoiler alert, Christine's dead because she accidentally shot her.
Yeah, because she was trying to do a murder suicide with Christine's child.
Right. And there's the other plot going on here. The kid is the Phantom because he's 10 years old. He's 10 years old.
Yeah. And he can play chopsticks.
Yes. Yes, he can play chopsticks.
Which means he's super musical.
And yeah, there's just a lot going on.
Yes. So in the original book, which was commissioned by Lloyd Webber for Frederick Forsyth to write, same things, basically, Phantom and Coney Island. I think that's a good idea. That's a fun idea, fun location. However, the reason why we know it can only be the Phantom's kid and not Raoul is Raoul lost his testicles in a duel. So he is...
There was no mention of this.
Yes, that was cut out of the musical for obvious reasons of it being really stupid. There was no Meg or Madame Giry in the book. It was like a bunch of other characters, but it still results in Christine getting shot because, you know, woman can't have agency and die. Must die.
Must die.
So Raoul was character assassinated in this musical. He was like the swashing man coming in to save the day in the first one. And here he's just like, I'm an alcoholic that spent my wife's money. La, 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 la. Why does she love me?
Yeah, that would have been a good song.
He's like
you
sauntering
should have
in.
The music.
So was there anything that you liked? I know we're going to be negative for about this. What did you like about this?
Oh, I mean, the pro shot I watched was... shot very well, and I know you told me it was done like 10 years ago.
Yep, and it is still the absolute best pro shot ever done, like, which is sad because it's for such a shitty musical. Like, it there's so much visually going on. The camera shoots it perfectly. It looks like a film despite it being a stage show. Like, it is good.
Yeah,
it is one of the best.
Very good. I had high hopes going in.
Yeah, that overture when you see like all the freak shows and all that going on, that looks good. Anna O'Byrne as Christine, absolutely incredible. She adds a lot of agency and voice to a character that doesn't have much. She tries to bring as much to it as she can. She's fantastic. She's one of the best real Christines ever, like in the proper musical, but she's also very good in this. Everyone's voices sounds very nice.
Yes, they do. They all sound wonderful.
Sharon Millerchip, with a very thankless role of Meg, is performing the hell out of it and trying her best to like add dimension to the actions she's committing.
I would agree.
The role isn't doing her any favors, but she's really, really trying. Is there a song you like, maybe?
Oh, I like the The hindsight one. That
Devil
was a
take
good
the
one.
Hindmost?
Devil take the hindmost, yes.
We've a son, our bond secure.
Are you sure?
What?
Are you so sure?
What do you mean?
Such a child, strange to see, talented, musical. Is he more you or me? Which one do you find most?
You lie!
Yet
no
doubt
woman could
doubt your wife
or would
doubt your son.
Such a man.
Everything.
You're insane.
Now we
so
play,
now I play
for your
my life.
Devil take the hindmost.
I very much enjoyed that song, but probably because it sounded different.
Because it sounded like a song that belongs in the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Like, there's three songs that sound like they belong in the Phantom of the Opera. It's the opening number, Till I Hear You Sing. Like, that feels like, okay, yeah. And that was the first one they released all the way back in 2009 from this musical, where it's like, oh, this might be good. You know, this could work. I can hear this coming together and becoming a thing. Then the show came out, and nope. Then there's Beauty Underneath, which sounds like a rock and roll Phantom song.
Yes. Which I liked. It was good.
In a vacuum, that song can be cool.
I agree.
Then Devil Take the Hindmost, which what they're doing in the song is garbage, but the song itself
right.
is pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. The premise of the song is terrible. The song itself. Cool.
Yeah, we didn't even bring up that literally the Phantom goes behind Christine's back and makes a bet for her life with her ex-husband or her husband.
Yeah.
No agency no. whatsoever.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the You Look Better With the Lights Off song?
Huh?
The song where we fucked multiple times. We have to tell the audience we fucked
oh
a bunch.
God.
But it was okay because the there was no moon, so I couldn't see your face.
Yeah, I blocked that out.
What? How do you block off the most insane part of the show?
I don't know. I don't remember that happening. I don't remember this song.
Oh, how about I read some lyrics for you?
Please do. Like, I vaguely remember it happening, but I also remember them singing, like, four songs around that one song.
Oh, yeah, so, that song is 6 minutes long and it's followed up by a four-minute song that means nothing.
Yeah.
So, the chorus, the repeated verse, is describing how they fucked.
Right.
So, like we introduced it. Once there was a night beneath the moonless sky, too dark to see a thing, too dark to even try, you know, because I'm so ugly it'll be easier to fuck me. I stole to your side to tell you I must go. I couldn't see your face but sent you even so those are the two verses. Then the chorus, and I touched you and I felt you and I heard those ravishing refrains, the pulse of the music in your pulse, the singing in your veins, and I held you and I touched you and embraced you and I felt you.
Yes, the singing in the veins. I remember that.
But yeah, and hold on. And I kissed you and caressed you and the world around us fell away. We said things in the dark we never dared to say.
Mm-hmm.
Where's again and then again? Because I know that's in there somewhere. And I caught you and I kissed you and I took you and caressed you with the need too urgent to deny. And nothing mattered them except for you and I. Again and then again beneath the moonless sky. They fucked. They raw dogged 8 or 9 times that night to create that stupid kid.
And he was shocked. He was so shocked. He's like, oh, the kid? It's mine?
After I free blasted into his mom 20 times?
Again and again?
Like, hey, stamina, good on you, Phantom.
Seriously. For a guy that never gets it.
And she doesn't make it sound like he was bad, because he was obviously bad. Let's be clear.
Was he?
I mean,
I don't know. She went back for more.
I guess. So that was the night before she was married.
Oh, fuck.
Like, you came and found where I hid on the night before you were wed. Like,
yes.
Cringe as fuck. Can you imagine being that hung up on a guy that the day before you get married, it's like, I'm gonna let him raw dog me.
No, I'm too much of an anxious person. I'd be afraid.
Especially if that guy was a confirmed murderer.
Also, like, I'm just about to get married to the man I supposedly love.
Also, how did she know where he was? Like, he just says, you came and found where I hid. How the fuck does she know?
Right.
Like, that's glossed over and no one brings that up. How did she find him?
I don't know. I mean, to be fair, he just walked in her room out of...
With a fog machine up his ass and all that.
With a fog machine. I mean, And he was in the mirror at times. I mean, this man is anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So, you didn't like that song?
No, I, like I said, that was the one I kind of forgot about.
It is so long and so stupid.
It is. I do remember thinking, this is a very long song.
And I touched you.
And I felt you. And I heard those ravishing refrains.
The music of your palms.
A singing in your veins.
And I held
you. And I touched you.
And embraced you.
And I felt you.
And with every breath and every sigh, I felt no longer scared.
I felt no longer shy. At last, our feelings bend
beneath
the moonless sky.
So we talked about all the things that were good.
Mm-hmm.
What is so bad about this? There is so much bad about this, but what do you think are the worst parts?
Oh, the story is bad.
Part of me kind of likes this better than the first Phantom.
Do you? Why?
The first it's Phantom... is oh, so God. Boring throughout most of it.
At least this
is engaging and stupid. Like, this I watch as a comedy and have a blast. That first one, that first two-thirds are real rough, and then it's interesting, then another two-thirds are real rough.
Yeah, I feel like it took, like, the first 40 to 50 minutes to actually get into the plot.
Yeah, whereas here, we're right away, we're getting into it. This musical wastes no fucking time, in all fairness to it.
True.
Like, we don't have characters to set up, but the characters to set up are garbage.
Okay, listen. I looked up the Wikipedia page before I started, and they said, because I was like, is this a sequel?
Yes.
Like, and it said, yeah, but no. That's literally what the Wikipedia page said.
Is that a direct quote? Yeah, but no?
Yeah, but no. No. Listen, it was like... You don't have to see the first Phantom.
Oh, that's what Andrew Lloyd Webber said.
Yeah, but it's clearly a sequel.
Yeah, there's okay. No way you're going to understand what the fuck's going on in this without at least mild context from the first one.
Right, because I was even having a hard time and I saw the first one years ago.
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber's full of shit.
I know.
Yeah. Dare we talk about the Phantom's performance in this movie? The gentleman, Ben Lewis... Very talented vocalist. Every face he pulls, like, he is making a face. He is performing to the back of the audience when there's a camera 3 feet away.
It's very true.
Like, there are so many ridiculous shots of him where he is just, his eyes are full open, his mouth is full pout. He's got a mask on and he's trying to show that every emotion through that mask.
True. I thought his eyes were going to pop out of his head a couple times.
Especially to how naturalistic everyone else is playing it, like Anna O'Byrne, especially Sharon Millerchip, who's like nailing it. Like, she's really doing a good job for like... He is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like if we kind of talk about Dear Evan Hansen, same thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, Ben Platt is just like overacting. He's acting because he's used to being on a stage where, you know, when there's a camera in front of you, it should be a little bit more natural, more subtle.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes it works, depending on the role. This was not that role.
Yeah.
So the weirdest part of this, like, how does Meg go from zero to murderer?
Christine comes back.
Yes.
And see, at first I thought she was excited that Christine was back, which she probably was.
Okay.
It's her friend.
Let's pause for a second. So,
yes.
In the original London version, what we're watching now is a very heavily revised Australian production.
Okay.
In the original London version, it's basically stealing the structure from Phantom. You do not see the Phantom until 25 minutes in. He sings Till I Hear You Sing 25 minutes in after, like, a bunch of, like, performances from Meg and all that. And then he sings Till I Hear You Sing. And then Christine comes in 38, 40 minutes in. And then all of that. But when she finds out Christine's coming, she's like, oh, that cunt, I hate her. Why is she coming here? And then people are like, wait, why would she do that? And then that was one of the big revisions, is figuring out Meg's character, having her be excited. But then the story doesn't really work to get to the natural conclusion of her doing a murder.
Right. You're right. Yeah. So she, at first, she does seem excited. And then what? She finds out Christine is singing the same night as her.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And then so she becomes upset because the Phantom doesn't notice her like he notices Christine.
Yeah.
And then what? She went all out. Oh, she went all out on the performance of
Bathing Beauty.
Bathing Beauty. I'm never going to remember the name. It's always going to be the Bathing Suit Babe. And
the strip show. Let's be clear.
And she comes out and she's talking to her mother and she's like, Mommy, did you see my performance? Like, oh, I bet you he thought it was so great. And she's like, yeah, he wasn't, like, the Phantom wasn't even, he wasn't even there. He was with Christine in her room. Like, he didn't even see you. And then she lost it.
I mean, it's cringe as fuck. I mean, there is some context for why she went so crazy.
Yes.
It is probably one of the more subtler things in the Australian version. It is less subtle in the London version, where it is implied that in order to get all the money for all the stuff that Madame Giry is talking about, Madame Giry whored out her daughter to sleep with men to get the financing.
Oh.
So when she's got the gun to Gustav at the end, when she's like, here's the big finish, and now the show, that part?
Yeah.
All right. Always wondered how to make you watch. Well, watch me now. I took a little trip to Coney Island. I took a little trip because of you. I did as mother said and followed where you led and tried to do what little I could do. Well, here's the way it works in Coney Island. They make you pay for every little crumb. I gave what they would take. I gave it for your sake. Now look at me and see what I become. Bathing Beauty on the beach, Bathing Beauty in her dressing room, Bathing Beauty in the dark, on their laps, in their arms, in their bids. Like,
That's terrible.
That is...
I would kill Gustav too.
Like, that is the development we have there. And it's almost set up like a twist, but you can barely hear the lyrics. It is so... But that is actually slightly interesting, at least. Character assassination still, but it adds a little depth to why she's doing what she's doing, and it's so quickly glossed over.
Yeah, it would have been nice to not gloss over it, and if it was more obvious in the show itself.
Yeah, it's in the text, but not in the action.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
It was in the action in the London version where Madame Giry is like, there's a gentleman waiting in your dressing room, Meg. And then that the payoff is that those lines at the end and you're like, oh, let them put the two and two together. But that is still in the lyrics, but you didn't make the connection. I bet Andrew didn't. Most people don't because the lyrics go by real fast. But right. Sharon Millerchip is playing to that truth very well.
Huh.
I'm trying to defend the show.
I mean, I think you're doing a good job. There were parts I enjoyed. It was all right at times, but at other times...
It's bad.
You were like, what the fuck am I watching?
It's unfocused.
It is very unfocused. That's a really good way to define it.
Like, let's take a look at the Phantom and his son's storyline. So he threatens to murder the child at first.
Yeah.
Straight up. And she's like, how dare you? He's like, better sing the song then, bitch. And then he just outright kidnaps the kid, because even though she was going through with it. Weird choice. And then the kid starts playing chopsticks and he's like, oh, you're my kid, 10 years old. And then he sings one of the weirdest songs ever written for a stage musical.
Hell yeah, he does.
The Beauty Underneath, which sounds sexual as hell. In fact, when I first listened to the album, I thought it was between Christine and the Phantom. It was so sexual.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Do you find yourself beguiled by the dangerous and wild? Do you feed on the need for the beauty underneath? Have you felt your senses surge and surrendered to the urge and been hooked as you looked at the beauty underneath? When you stare behind the night, can you glimpse its primal might? Might you hunger to possess, hunger that you can't repress?
Yes! It seems so beautiful, so strange yet
same way.
What happens in this song?
Beauty underneath. Okay, is this the one where it's him in the sun and the,
yes,
and he keeps saying yes?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So yes. Basically what happens in this song is, I correct me if I'm wrong, he just found out, like, this is his son.
Yes.
He just came to the conclusion that this is his son. So
he was like, doing Punnett squares in his head and all that.
Yeah. And so he's like, do you see the world the way I see it?
And the kid says yes a lot.
The kid says yes a lot. And it's talking about the beauty underneath.
But it also means his mask.
Also means his mask. And they're kind of just like, the way this is shot, it's absolutely beautiful. It's very cool. You have all of these really cool, like, see-through, I don't even know how to describe them.
Freaks,
like,
almost, like.
Like, yeah, well, yeah, there's freaks inside, like, these, like, very, like, triangular cases. It's very, the way it's set up and shot is absolutely beautiful. But yeah, there's a lot of, like, freaks and, like, Cirque du Soleil type of vibes, and they're singing about the beauty of the world and maybe the way the Phantom sees the world, but also, like, the way the Phantom looks under his mask. And so at the end of the song, he takes off of his mask to reveal his face to his son, and his son freaks out and runs away.
Does it bother you that you don't see the face in this show? I know we saw it a lot in the last show, but it bothers me a little bit.
Does it? Yeah, I would have liked to see his face. But also, I need to know, why does he turn gray in this scene and nowhere else?
What?
Okay, in this scene, like, after he reveals his face to his son, it looks like he has, like, a terrible bald cap on with, like, just, like, little gray hairs.
Yeah.
And he looks super old.
Oh, he has a wig on. He has, like, he has a black wig on that he takes off.
Which I assume, but I don't ever remember seeing him take the wig off. Like, I just remember looking up and him having, like, gray hair, and I remember thinking, why was that the only time I saw that?
In the original musical, he also has, like, He has bald hair and like a part of his head missing, and you see brains sticking out. Like, it's a real bad.
That would have been cooler. Like,
yeah.
This just looked like a really bad bald cap.
Yep. Don't know why they made that choice. Very, very weird.
It was very strange.
But not as strange as Christine walks in, gives Meg the child, says, please take him back to my room. Bad idea for like three reasons that you'll get to by the end of the show.
Yes.
And then she talks to the Phantom, who's like, you know what? I didn't know it was my kid. He ran away like you did. Y'all should probably leave. And she's like, no way. I made a promise. Not like you weren't just threatening my child yesterday.
Right.
But because I made a promise, I'm going to stick around. And then she leaves him and they almost kiss, but don't. But right. She leaves him and he's like, man, I got a kid. I got a crotch dumpling. I'm going to give him everything, all my money. Because as you do, you just say that out loud to himself. And then Madame Giry's like, all the monies? What about our monies? And then that's how Act 1 ends.
That is how Act 1 ends. And she's like, screw that bastard.
Like, it's a bait and switch, so you think she's the big villain when Meg really is.
Yeah.
It's so right. Stupid.
It's bad. But that's how Act 1 ends. And then we go into Act 2, where they are
okay.
At the bar, right?
Musical theater structure dictates. The opening of Act 2 should be a big number that kind of just nothing happens, so people have time to sit down in their seats, and they're like, all right. We opened straight into plot. Right into plot, right away. Raoul at his bar stool. And he's just like, man, why don't Christine like me? Or why does she like me? I'm a piece of shit. And I kind of like the song. I think the song's really cute.
Yeah, it is. It's a cute song.
Yeah, he sings it well. I think his name's Simon Gleason. He does a very good job singing it. Very well performed. Better than any of Raoul's songs in the first Phantom. TBH.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like all I ask of you that much.
God, I don't remember anything from the first Phantom.
Man murders a bunch. Girls like, right. Leave me alone. And then he's like, okay, I will. And then I guess he doesn't because sequel.
Huh. Maybe I'll go back and watch it.
Yeah, it's a much better thing. Maybe hey, people on the internet, let us know if you want us to do a watch along of the 25th anniversary. Me and Brie will sit down and watch it. That'll be
a
lot of fun.
And then the sequel might make a little bit more sense to me.
I'm so glad you watched this without the context of the first one, because
I've
always been curious.
I mean, I had little context. I got it along the way. Like, even like looking it up like afterwards, like I got it along the way, because eventually he's like, you know, they kind of spell it out for you in song, which is nice.
It's nice. It could have been more effective.
Oh, yeah.
But then Phantom shows up and is like, yo, motherfucker, you'd seen the last of me, bitch. And he's like, it's okay. My wife and I have a kid. We got a perfect life. He's like, ha-ha, I fucked your wife.
So are you sure that's your kid?
How does it feel to be cucked?
Like, he plays keys like I do.
Yeah. And he's like, no one would ever fuck you. No way. You're insane.
He's like, am I? Gaslighting him the whole way.
Yeah. Girl boss gaslight. Gatekeep.
What happens next? Because I honestly don't remember. I like that song a lot, and then I don't.
Yeah, then the musical kind of pauses itself, and Christine gets ready for her performance, and she turns to her son and gives the, hey, I love you, how about we go and hang out after this show, which means one of us is gonna die.
Yep.
Like, as soon as that conversation happens, it's like, well, one of you is gonna die. That hanging out is not gonna be fun.
Mm-mm.
That's not gonna happen. Raoul comes in, he finally fucking puts a suit and tie on, dresses
Thank
like
God,
an adult,
Raoul.
Does the bare minimum, and is like, hey, let's just go. And she's like, no, I made a promise. And if he, there was nothing in the rules that stipulated he couldn't explain why they need
right.
to go. Where he's like, I made this bet, we'll get all our money if you and I just hop on a boat. She'd be like, oh, fuck yeah, let's do this.
Right, like, give the girl some context.
like, have a conversation with your wife, maybe.
Well, you know what? Most problems could be solved in films and in theater with a little conversation.
Yeah, or trusting people. Why doesn't anyone trust other people? Why do everyone lie to each other?
No idea.
Like, I don't think I've ever lied to you ever, Bree.
No, I same.
Like, why would I? We're friends. I would tell you the truth.
You know, growing up, my parents said, it's just easier if you tell the truth.
It is.
I always have told the truth because I like the easy way.
So you tell the truth out of laziness?
Yeah.
That's fair. And then she's like, I'll think about it. And then the Phantom shows up and I'm like, ooh, pretty necklace. And then she's like, well, I got to go with the necklace guy.
It's like, yeah, the necklace and the thrill of singing a song.
And his dick just felt so good in me. Free blast 20 times in one night. Turned me into a full Twinkie. This is...
Yeah.
Andrew would never let me get away with saying that shit. You just left that off.
It's okay.
Oh, you're going to cut out me saying that Christine became a full Twinkie that night?
No, stop. No, I wouldn't.
See, with Raoul, she's a toaster strudel, but with the Phantom, full Twinkie.
No, please don't refer to women as food. Please don't.
TikTok has ruined me.
Is it TikTok?
That's where I learned those terms.
Oh, God. What the hell is on your For You page?
I don't know. It's mostly what my girlfriend sends me. We have a really weird sense of humor where...
It's okay.
Yeah. Let's hear what Jake has to say. Call him.
You want me to call him? Okay, I also figured we could transition into some brief views because I also pulled up some Letterboxd stuff. So you can tell
me. Yes! I forgot!
So you can tell me if it's 1-star or 5-star.
I'm so excited!
And then Jake can come and talk about the music.
It's time for previews! Yeah.
It's time for previews. It's time for previews.
Okay, if I remember correctly, I watched this after my granddad died and could not watch the scene with the gravestone ? It literally made me cry hysterically for hours. So what did I do? I watched it repeatedly until I stopped having a reaction. Took me like 2 weeks. I was so proud of myself, and I watched the scene in front of my parents to prove to them that I could do it. Fast forward to 2021, my horse fucking died, so I watched the scene again. Hysterically cried from midnight until 3 a.m. The musical has caused me a lot of pain.
5 stars.
That's 1 star.
Are you shitting? And that's for Love Never Dies. There's not even a gravestone scene in Love Never Dies. I think they're thinking of Phantom.
I think they are.
1 star.
1 star.
All right, I'm 0 for 0.
This is just like when the movie based on Harry Styles fan fiction was released, but worse. It catered to the 50-year-olds.
That's a 1 star, but that's a very accurate description of this.
That is indeed a 1 star.
And very, very accurate to how this got made. It is literal fan fiction made into a fucking musical.
Wow, a lot of people rated this. Okay. I'm just shocked.
It's been 10 years. 10 long years. I reviewed this damn thing. 10 long years.
After seeing Phantom live in London on stage last week, it was time to watch the sequel. This really took the story forwards. I truly enjoyed this and don't know why the show didn't run longer than it did. The stage designs were magnificent. The songs and music were brilliant. Bravo.
5 stars.
That is 5 stars. It gave you an easy one.
You did. You haven't even gotten to like the insane people section of it.
Hate how the Phantom hates this masterpiece.
What? I hate how the Phantom hates this masterpiece. 5 stars.
That is 5 stars. That's a good one.
And that's about Bathing Beauty, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm assuming. So, okay, let's keep moving on.
Moving on up, moving on up, moving on up.
Give him the gun, Meg.
That's a one star, but that's funny.
Yeah. Ben Lewis's shocked Pikachu face in every scene is chef's kiss.
5 stars.
It's 5 stars.
I agree. His face is the amazing and terrible, and part of what makes this so watchable. His performance is not good, but goddamn, I love watching it.
I liked him. He did.
His voice is incredible, but them faces.
I don't think this person watched this movie.
The people listening to this podcast.
This is the car scene, though.
Oh, when the car shows up and drops him off.
Oh, yeah!
5 stars.
That is 5 stars. That's a good one. Let's see. God, you know, 2,000 people reviewed this.
And they all probably loved it.
A lot of them did.
But there's none that love it as much as I would let the plant eat my ass and then fart out my bum hole.
I'll never forget that.
Me neither.
It's burnt into my brain. Okay, here's one. In your opinion, what is Andrew Lloyd Webber's worst musical? And why is it Love Never Dies?
That's a 1 star.
It is.
It's not his worst musical. Woman in White, by Jeeves. There's a lot of other ones. This one I can at least hum some of the songs to.
Right.
Bathing Beauty on the beach.
Bathing Beauty.
Say hello, look at my titties.
A lot of people are saying that it seems like fan fiction.
I mean, it does. It was a very... There was a lot of traits in this that were common in fandom fan fiction before this musical came out. Like Raoul being drunk, which was never a part of his personality in any novel until fanfic.
I need to find good ones like you do.
I do say it takes about an hour going through all those Letterboxd reviews.
I guess everyone hates having fun because this musical absolutely fucks.
It does, again, again, and again.
It is really bad. It is, I know, but I love it.
5 stars.
Yeah.
And it fucks, I agree.
I mean, I'd watch it again.
It is not the worst thing we've covered on this show by far.
No.
It's not even the top 20, I don't think.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, I fucking hate you, girl.
1 star.
Yeah.
Letterboxd is full of like people that think they're actual film critics and then insane people and no in between them.
They did the best with what they could and that's all that matters.
1 star.
It's true. Love died in 1986 and I refuse to let Andrew Lloyd Webber tell me otherwise.
1 star and I agree.
I'm just looking at 1 stars at this point. There wasn't many 5 stars, I'll tell you that.
Come on, end on a good one.
The set design was incredible. The songs
5 stars.
Are also really beautiful. But why was this entire thing written like a bad fanfic?
And that sums it up, I think.
I think it is. Looks beautiful. Songs are all right. Why the fuck does it seem like a fanfiction? We don't know.
You know, if Christine just hadn't come back, I think people would be much more fond of this, where the fam fucks off and goes on a new adventure.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, just let Christine have her happy ending and the Phantom find someone new.
I would have loved that.
Like, imagine if he found, like, a blind girl. Then we have some blind representation. We could hire some, like, actual, like, blind actresses. And it could have been interesting. Have me write your Phantom sequel, Andrew Lloyd Webber. It would have been better.
It would have. What is he doing? He's slacking. He's trying to write everything on his own. And not good.
No, he hired like 7 different writers.
I'm going to believe that he wrote this on his own. And that 7 other people were not involved with this process.
He hired someone to write a book to base it off of, then ignored most of it.
Beauty on the beach, bathing beauty, say hello, water
how about we hear what Jake had to say? Let's end on that note.
Okay. Jake views.
It's not even Jake views. It's just like he was also there.
He was also here and we need another opinion because I'm like, yeah, it's all right. And I don't really form opinions.
No, I'm just curious. This is just me. This is a bonus episode. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
Okay. I texted him and said, come on in.
Come into our lair, Mr. Ooh. Jacob. Hello. Introduce yourself, Jake.
No.
Introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, I'm Bree's boyfriend. I'm Jake.
Yes, and you were also forced to watch Love Never Dies with her last night.
I wouldn't say forced.
You definitely did watch it.
I definitely did watch it.
What do you have any connection to the original Phantom musical?
So yeah, I saw the original Phantom of the Opera, like not on Broadway, but I saw it live in theaters.
On a theater.
And we were talking about it. I was like, I do not remember a fucking thing about that that play at all. I was like, why?
I remembered like it was Beauty and the Beast.
I was like, yeah, no, like right. I remember that like he fucks with their dreams, but mostly I just remember
he fucks with their dreams.
He fucks with their dreams, but there's like an exploding chandelier, and that's mostly all I remembered.
That's what most people remember a fan of the opera.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of Love Never Dies?
Love Never Dies is interesting, for sure. It's like.
We read a lot of reviews that say that it seems like it was like a bad fanfic. What do you think about that?
A bad fanfic of what?
Phantom of the Opera. Have some traits of like what Phantom of the Opera fans would write on fanfiction.net during the early 2000s.
Is it like the My Immortal of?
Yes, it is. Imagine if. someone took like My Immortal animations and then turned it into a full musical, and that's what this is.
Oh, so okay, well I'm gonna stop right there. But yeah, what, you know what, I don't know what you guys, if you already did your cheese ratings or not, but like,
not yet. You're gonna be there for it.
Oh wow, okay, that was exciting. But I was gonna say, for me, I think definitely that like it's the most middle of the road thing I've ever seen in my whole life, which I think is a testament to his consistency as a writer, and so I appreciate that about him.
You know what, that's fair. That is absolutely fair. You think it is on par with the original because you remember just as little.
Exactly. I was like, I will leave that with the exact same feeling of like, God, I'm so hungry. I don't remember any of that.
You were very hungry.
I just didn't care. I was like, yeah, she's pregnant, or she was pregnant. It doesn't.
What did you think of the song where he free blasts inside her 20 times?
Oh, where he's like, she's like, and I touched you. He's like, and I fucked you.
Yeah,
she's like,
that
and
one.
I loved you. He's like, and I fucked you. It's like, yeah.
Where yeah. She finds him creepy in the middle of the night, and then raw dogs her a bunch, and then leaves her there.
And then he's like, oh, look, I felt really ugly. It's like, all right.
Clarity was too intense.
It's just another example of a man letting his insecurities ruin everything in his life that's good. So for two people. In this one.
Three if you include Raul.
Oh, who else were we talking about? Because I was talking about Raul, and I was talking about Raul and Mr. Y, the Phantom.
What about the son? The son never got to live with his real dad. He got to live with the rich Vicomte.
Now he does.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
All he's got now.
Well, now we've got to have a threequel where it's Raul and the Phantom raising the child together. Two and a half masks.
I told Bree the whole time, I was like, what's her name?
Meg?
Yeah. I was convinced that she was in love with Christine, and then she was in love with the Phantom. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I just missed that completely. I was
she
like,
should have been in love with Christine.
I was hoping for it.
But. All right, here's another thing. I brought this up to Bree earlier. Did you pick up on the fact that Meg was prostituting herself to make money for the Phantom's theatrical experience?
I'm assuming that the only time I could imagine that was being alluded to was in the like ending sequence.
Yes.
Okay, like, because like she's just, you know, in my bed and da da da.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
that is the only allusion to it at all.
You're paying way more attention.
Do you know what sucks is that I really wasn't. I was like, this is typical white man shit, just ruining a lady's life. He's like, not everyone can be Christine. It's like,
oh
you're
yeah, the most helpful
jerk
thing to say at that
I was
moment.
I was like, that is
speaking to the microphone, love.
That is true emotional intelligence right there. Yeah, you're having a really bad day. Well, I really like this girl. You know, it just sucks that you like me so much. I just understand how bad that is for you.
Girl, so. Your exactly. ass ain't as fat as Christine's.
See, oh. Anyway, I love Christine so much. But yeah. But no, I did not pick up on that, honestly. But I could imagine that that was what she was talking about.
Yeah, which adds a tiny grain of depth to that character, who I think was portrayed very well for such thankless role.
I agree. I felt like the stuff with Christine and Raoul was maybe the least interesting stuff in the play. And I don't know if that's just me, because I was like, anytime they're on screen, I'm like, I don't care about their kid problems. this is just not real. Like, COVID's, like, ruined me, where I'm like, that's not a real problem. They could talk about that and this would be fixed. But, like, this guy's having, like, nightmares where he's like, my son is too beautiful. And he's like, I was like, you know, that's, like, a real problem. That's, like, that's a real person problem.
Wait. My son is too beautiful. Do you know your dreams?
We called it, like, 3 seconds before he said it. He's like, my son is beautiful. Perhaps too beautiful. And she's like, does he want to fuck this kid? I was like, I don't know. And it's like, he sees the beauty underneath. And I'm like, so we're just sitting there. I'm like, oh no.
Is he going to marry the baby?
He's like, be with you. He's like, will you always be with me always? Yes. It's like, ugh. Okay.
And then he takes off his mask and the kid's like, too much for me.
And he's like, oh, safe. He's like, banana, safe word.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I did call that, though. I was like, I'm waiting for this. I was like, that was the truly, like, funniest moment of the play. I don't know if it was meant to be, but it served for me. It was definitely hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
That's great.
Still, the 9 minute song about fucking is probably still my favorite funny moment of the play, but
that broke us. I think
I told him, I was like, oh, I don't remember.
Cause I was just, yeah, I was just going, he's like, and I felt you. Yep. Yeah, he said that 7 times in this song.
And it keeps getting louder cause they like go up a half tone every time screaming it.
I would say, did you guys talk about how the music would about musical storytelling in terms of like,
no, we didn't.
You want to talk, Jake?
We can. I assume these songs have names.
You're right. You are correct.
Oh God, that's horrible. Because I could not tell you. That felt like a big long musical fever dream.
You couldn't guess the name of the last song.
The Bathing Beauty song.
Oh, I figured. Oh, what a peach. but no. So there's a part near. When Meg comes in and is talking to her mother, it's right before, I think, the first song where we see Christine. Just the way that, like, they're singing, like, you can tell that Christine kind of has a more, like, a wistful memory. Or, sorry, Meg has a more wistful memory of Christine and just the way that she remembers her. And that her melody reflects that. And then when the mother interjects, the note choice is almost like a tritone, I think, clashing.
We brought this up a little bit earlier, but... Yeah. That Meg's entire little section there was added because in the original London version, she just literally had the same thing as her mom where she's like, oh, the fucking Christine's coming in. And then they're like, that didn't make really much sense. So in the Australian production, which is what they wrote that little, you seem 1,000 miles away, but now you're not, like, that was just inserted there.
That was it. That was an executive decision. Like, they're not getting that part. We should probably fix that.
There was a lot of those in the transition.
I was going to say, this is not like a musical that either of us were familiar with before watching it. It was
good.
That would have sucked if we had to watch something again that we had already seen.
It'd be real sad. It would be really sad if you like went out of your way like, oh, I'm excited to see Love Never Dies.
And then I'm just pretending like this fucking shit. She doesn't even know what's going to happen in part 3. Like,
in 2.5 masks. Where Raoul and the Phantom raise a baby together.
I'd watch that. I'd be more interested in that story than whatever this was.
All right. So I guess it's time for what are our overall thoughts on Love Never Dies and our cheese ratings?
Go ahead, Jacob.
Oh, no, I'm the newest. I need to see how it
goes. No, Brie, you're first. You're okay. Andrew.
Oh, you're right. I'm filling in for Andrew this evening. So I should probably pick a cheddar.
Because you're lazy?
No, because cheddar is good. No.
Because Andrew's lazy and always picks cheddar.
Okay, so I think Jacob probably summed it up the best, is that this sequel is very middle of the road. It's very okay. It's all right at times, but it is very strange at times. The music is okay. It looks great. They did a great job casting. Ben Lewis, great job at expressing yourself. I am going to give this a Gouda, because it was Gouda.
Wow.
It was good.
Jake, what about you? What are your overall thoughts and your cheese rating?
I'm going to give this play 3 baby bells out of 5 baby bells. It was fine. It was okay. You know, I think there's some strong moments. I definitely think any moment that the count.
He does talk like the count, though.
I have poor body image.
I am going to kill your son.
It's like, oh, wait, he's my son. My beautiful, handsome, kissable son.
Oh, God.
But so I think any moment that the Phantom was on screen was definitely a highlight. His opening number is great.
Yes.
I think it starts off great. And I think it never really gets to that kind of height again. So I'm going to give it any cheese that I eat, but mostly Havarti, because that's my favorite cheese. But any cheese that I eat is going to make my tummy hurt eventually. So only can I have it for a little bit.
That's fair. I don't like the show. I still think it's a little more fun to watch than the first one, because it's a little shorter and a little bit goofier and stupid.
It's shorter?
Yeah, it's a little shorter.
Little.
How long is The Phantom of the Opera?
About 2:45.
Mm-hmm.
God. That's just an entire synapse of my child memory I don't have anymore.
I mean, you're not using it.
Clearly not.
So we've covered this before, me and Andrew and a guest, Alisa, and I gave it a Nut Rebel vegan cheese because Meg went nuts. I don't remember.
Yeah,
Juliet
good.
Did not leave a note, but that was my cheese rating and I don't want to change it.
That's a good cheese.
I'm too lazy.
It's not too lazy. It's just that I want to stay consistent with myself.
That's very fair.
But thank you guys for joining us. Brie, Jake,
thank you for
watching
me,
this.
Both of you.
Of course.
Brie, this was so much fun. I just love talking to you. I know we love Andrew, but this is fun.
Oh, we love Andrew.
We miss Andrew.
Let's fucking kick him off the podcast so I can be on the podcast.
No.
Let's kill Andrew.
Oh my God.
Let's kill Andrew. Let's kill Andrew with a gun on a boat.
On a pier, come
on. Sorry, on a pier with my son watching.
We can't all be like Brianna. Brianna, it's always Brianna.
Him!
Ba 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 ba.
That's okay.
I'm going to be the one to die.
You think so?
What?
If we all can't be like Brianna.
Oh, that's true.
Andrew's going to kill Brianna. That makes sense.
I can be pretty like Brianna.
The idea that Andrew gives a shit about anything to get a gun involved is the funniest thing in the world to me.
He's like, who said cheddar sucks?
Who talks shit about Gouda?
All right, I'm going to go put our dog to bed now.
What? All right.
Okay.
Thank you guys
Thank
for
you,
having
Jake.
Me.
All right, time to wrap up this show.
Yes.
Brie, this was wonderful. You are probably one of my favorite people in the world, and I don't know about you. I had a lot of fun doing this, and I wouldn't mind doing things like this in the future where it's just you and I for different bonus things.
Sure.
I don't know how you feel about that.
I feel like I have to watch things more than once to form an actual opinion on them, but I'll do it.
That's fair. We could talk about Cheetah Girls next time.
I love Cheetah Girls.
I've never seen the Cheetah Girls, so it would be in your benefit next time.
Yes, I would have to rewatch it again. It might just be like Beauty and the Beast.
What? I got this confused with the Lizzie McGuire movie? Thank you guys for listening. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, all those places. Leave us a review. Next week, I think we're having another bonus episode, but the week after that, Andrew and I should be back in business.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, thank
Andrew,
you.
These are big shoes to fill.
They are, and you filled them very well.
Thanks.
As well as I could. It was a lot to ask of you at a late notice, and you nailed it. And I am very appreciative of you, Bree.
Thank you.
But why don't you guys go send some Bree some love on Twitter. Tell her how much you loved her on this episode, because I got a feeling this is going to be a secret fan favorite bonus.
No. Well, maybe.
Yeah, Love Never Dies. You guys are surprisingly positive about it for a show that nobody fucking likes.
It's not the worst thing.
Yeah, it really isn't. Bree, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
No.
Stripes!
Polka dots!
We'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese. Bathing beauty on the beach. Look at my titties. Say hello.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.